Kenner was standing next to it and he raised his hand as they walked up. "You found it okay then?" Nathan nodded at the Land Cruiser. McKenna nodded. "You can see it briefly if you're coming from town for a minute or so where the road rises outside your boundary, Nathan."
"Can you?"
"You didn't see it yourself?"
"I don't use that road."
Nathan looked the sergeant in the eye. "Only place it goes is town." McKenna kept his gaze.
"Fair point.
Look, sorry I couldn't be here yesterday. How was the other officer?" Nathan and Bub exchanged a glance.
"Fine,"
Nathan said. "I've heard good things about him." McKenna nodded at the car door and frowned.
"I thought he said this was unlocked."
"It was when we found it." Nathan handed over the keys. "He locked it."
"Why?"
"In case anyone came by." McKenna looked mildly amused, but said nothing as he opened the car and looked inside. He searched thoroughly, checking the same places as his colleague, plus a few more the other guy hadn't thought of. Like Ludlow, he paused at the sight of the food and water in the back. Nathan could smell the sandwiches and fruit starting to turn. Eventually, the sergeant slammed the rear door.
"I reckon we've got everything we're going to get, so you're all right to take this when you go."
Dismay crossed Xander's face.
"You're not going to hold it for, I don't know, investigation or something?"
"No, mate, I'm sorry." McKenna shook his head.
"Look, I honestly would if I thought it'd help. I'd get the CIB boys to fly in from the city, do all their tests, but you have to make a case for it, and they won't come for this. There's no sign of a struggle. There's nothing damaged, valuable equipment hasn't been stolen. I'm not sure what was going through Cameron's head, but your uncle didn't die in this car."
No one spoke for a minute. The crime scene tape tied to the door handles whipped in the wind.
"So what do we know?"
McKenna said, looking at the four of them. "Cameron said he was heading to Lehman's Hill, but for some reason he changed his mind, and it's a fair old hike from here to where he ended up. He would have known what he was getting himself into this time of year. On foot with no water. What time did he leave home on Wednesday?"
"About 8, Harry said. Ilsa and one of the casuals saw him."
"I've spoken to Steve at the clinic," McKenna said. "The autopsy's been booked, but he reckons Cameron was dead by Thursday mid-morning at the latest, maybe even a bit earlier given the temperature." He looked at Bub, his voice gentle. "You told Sergeant Ludlow you thought Cam had been having a bit of a hard time of it recently, mate. What was that about, do you think?"
"I don't know."
McKenna waited, but Bub said no more.
"Look," Harry stepped in. "Cam ran a tight ship, but he kept things close to his chest. You know that. But Bub's right. These last few weeks, there's been a few things going overlooked."
"Like what?" McKenna said.
"Nothing big, but stuff he said he was going to do but didn't. Fix the gate to the cattle yard, that kind of thing."
"He didn't mention falling out with anyone, someone from town?" McKenna asked. And both Bub and Harry shook their heads. "What about with either of you, his missus?" There was a tiny bristle at that, Nathan thought. But again, both shook their heads.
"Is that a no?" McKenna said. "Or a don't know?"
"No,"
Harry said at the same time as Bub said.
"Don't know."
The sergeant eyed them each in turn like a teacher at school. And Nathan started to feel a little guilty himself. Glancing up the line, he suspected he wasn't alone. The only exception was Xander, who was still watching Harry with a curious look.
"Well, I reckon anyone seeing the car standing empty like this would have done the right thing and reported it."
McKenna bit his words short. He glanced at Nathan, who stared back steady. If he dropped his gaze every time someone mentioned it, he'd never look anyone in the eye again. "Anyway," McKenna took a breath and went on.
"No calls came in, so I think we can assume no one came by. Do you think Uncle Cam might have stopped to help someone and got in trouble?"
Xander said. "A tourist or someone?"
"Look, I won't rule it out," McKenna said, "but I haven't heard of anyone coming through."
It wasn't easy, Nathan knew, for a stranger to make their way across the district without the locals knowing about it. The desert tracks were closed in the summer, leaving exactly two roads in or out. Two choices, leading to two other tiny towns in opposite directions and hundreds of kilometres apart. Everyone was forced to stop for fuel and supplies at some point, and locals tended to stare at strange cars at that time of year. It wasn't easy to sail through unnoticed, but Nathan thought it wasn't impossible. "And things are okay on the property?" McKenna said as Harry nodded. "And look, there's no point pretending this is a casual question. Are your firearms in order over there?" "Yes," Harry said, with a slight edge to his voice. "All accounted for? Locked up properly?" "Yes." "Where's the key kept these days? Locked up securely in line with regulations, no doubt?" McKenna said, deadpan. They all knew it usually hung by the back door. "I've got it," Harry said, and Nathan looked over in surprise. "It's been on my keyring for the past 3 weeks. McKenna looked at him. "Any reason you're carrying it?"
"No reason," Harry said. "Needed it one day and never put it back."
"Cameron didn't ask for it?"
"Didn't need to ask. He could have just taken it. But no, didn't ask for it, didn't take it."
"Right." McKenna frowned. He looked like he might say something else, then changed his mind. He looked instead at Nathan. "What about you? Any change on the firearms front?"
"No."
Nathan met his eye. "All still the same as last time." "All right," McKenna said. "How's Ilse coping?" Nathan felt a tiny prickle at her name. "She's not too good." "And your mum?" "Not too good either."
"No.
Well, tell him I'll give him a call." "And you blokes?" McKenna hesitated. "How are you all going? Can be hard this time of year, a lot of pressure from all sides. You all okay?" Nathan knew what he was asking. "Anyone else feel like walking out into the nothing?"
"We're good, I think," he said when no one else answered. "I mean, considering, good as can be expected.
And you know you can always call me or Steve at the clinic if you ever need to just have a yarn or whatever." They nodded dutifully.
"Good."
McKenna beckoned to Nathan. "Come with me. Got some info in the car I need to give you." Nathan followed him down the slope, and at the police car, McKenna reached into the glove box. He drew out a fistful of cards. "Cases like these, I'm supposed to give you these." Nathan took them. The cards had the phone numbers and websites for a suicide prevention helpline and a mental health charity. McKenna was watching him, looking uncomfortable.
"Something else?" Nathan said.
"Look, mate, that wasn't meant to be a dig earlier about no one reporting the car. And I wanted to say, I know you generally give town a wide berth."
"Well, yeah, I haven't got much choice, have I?"
"Well, that's not true. You do have a choice, mate. You could have come and stirred up trouble over the years, but you chose not to, and I appreciate that."
"Glad someone does.
And I know you say you're used to it by now, but in light of all this, if you feel like it's getting a bit much and you think you might..." McKenna trailed off.
"Top myself like Cam?"
"Yeah, pretty much. Look, if you ever feel like things are getting bad, you know you can come into town whenever you need to." Nathan nodded. McKenna was an okay guy. What had happened wasn't his fault. It was no one's fault but Nathan's own. And McKenna had been as even-handed as he could be about the whole incident. It wasn't easy being the only cop. He'd put in a good word for Nathan whenever he could, tried to build bridges. It wasn't his fault, it had made no difference.
"Thanks, mate," Nathan said. "I'm fine on my own, though.
I heard you had your radio switched off when the search call for Cameron went out."
"So?"
"So I thought we'd talked about that." Nathan didn't answer. "It's not the first time either."
"Didn't know there was a law about keeping it on."
"Good as round here, don't be a bloody smart ass," McKenna said. "Anyway, look, don't be shy to shout out if you need to."
"Yeah, okay."
There seemed to be nothing more to say, so Nathan waited as McKenna got into the police car and drove away. He watched until it was small, and walked back up the slope to the others.
What are those? Xander was looking at the cards in Nathan's hand, and Nathan passed them out. Bub rolled his eyes. Harry was looking out to the west, his expression its usual mask once more.
I want to go home along the tracks. Stop by the grave on the way.
There's nothing to see, Bub said.
Still.
Harry slipped the helpline card into his pocket, Nathan noticed. They all looked at Cameron's car.
Who wants to drive it back?
Bub asked, and there was a silence. We'll do it, Nathan said, with a glance at Xander, who nodded.
All right.
Harry turned to head down the slope to his car. Stick close, just in case Cam did have some sort of engine trouble. No worries. It was clear none of them really believed that. As Bub followed Harry down the slope, Nathan untied the police tape from Cameron's door handles and climbed in. The driver's seat was worn smooth and he reached down and raked it back and forth until it was the right distance from the pedals. Its contours felt unfamiliar, having been broken in by his brother's lighter frame. Nathan adjusted the rearview mirror and saw his own eyes reflected back at him. They looked enough like Cam's to make him look away. Harry knew where to turn. Xander's voice was quiet from the passenger seat.
What?
He knew. He nodded at Harry's car. On the way here, he knew which track led through the rocks to Cam's car.
Because Bub told him, I heard him.
No. Bub said it after Harry had already started the turn.
No.
Nathan tried to picture it. It was before.
Wasn't it?
He'd been lost in his own thoughts at the time, not paying attention. Anyway, Harry knew where the car was. He'd been told.
I know, but you and I knew yesterday and we still missed it. We'd even been here once with Bub and we still got it wrong when we drove the other cop out.
How did Harry know which gap to take?
Because he knows this whole area like the back of his hand. He knows it as well as anyone. He would have been able to guess.
At the bottom of the slope, Harry's car roared to life. Nathan shook his head and turned Cameron's keys. The car started perfectly as it had yesterday. Slowly, with his foot poised on the brake, he eased the car into motion and began to follow Harry and Bub towards the grave. Harry stuck to the fence line, retracing the journey they'd made the day before. Nathan could see shadowy heads moving in the car in front as the two men spoke to each other.
He would have just worked it out, Nathan said again.
Yeah, Xander said finally. He slumped back in his seat.
Yeah, probably.
Sorry. It's been a weird couple of days.
I know.
Harry's car started to pull ahead and Nathan pressed the accelerator to keep up. He couldn't see Harry and Bub moving any more. Perhaps they'd said everything they wanted to say. Nathan watched the car pull further away and felt a tiny prickle, like the start of a rash, small and manageable, but the wrong side of comfortable. He told himself to damp it down. This was Uncle Harry. Nathan had known the man literally his entire life. If anyone could read the land, it was Harry. It was not unreasonable at all that he could make an educated guess. Still, a tiny voice whispered in Nathan's ear. It was a big land, and it was a good guess. Chapter 10. Cameron's abandoned food was starting to smell in the back and Nathan wound down the window a crack.
We could dump it, Xander said, clearly thinking the same thing.
Yeah, Nathan nodded, but didn't slow down. The stuff in the back was Cameron's survival gear. For reasons he couldn't quite articulate, it felt strangely reckless to discard any of it now. Xander was still watching the shadows of Harry and Bub in the car in front. Nathan frowned to himself.
He trusted Harry. He honestly did, with his life probably, if it ever came to it. Still, as Harry turned his head to say something to Bub, Nathan found himself replaying that minute before they'd reached Cameron's car. "It's interesting that Glenn could see Cam's car from outside your boundary," Xander said suddenly. "It was pretty well hidden otherwise."
"Yeah, but you could say the same for lots of places. Cam could have dumped it in the middle of the road in broad daylight and there'd be a good chance no one would find it for ages. How often does anyone come along there? Once a week? And then it's only us or the Atherton lot."
"I suppose," Xander said. "It's just so flat around here. If I didn't want my car seen, I'd leave it round the rocks too." He looked out at the empty land. "It's shit that no one drove or flew by earlier. Even if Thursday was too late, Wednesday might not have been." Nathan didn't reply, but Xander was right. If the car had been found sooner, the alarm would have been raised immediately and help called to hand. Nathan suddenly wondered. He tried to stop himself but couldn't, whether the same would be true for himself. If it were his car found abandoned and him in trouble or missing, would the local passerby call it in? Or would all those people who still turned their backs on him discover that, actually, when push came to shove, they were no better than he was? He honestly didn't know. It wasn't Ilse's fault, not even a little bit. But Nathan wouldn't have been in town that day if it hadn't been for her. It had been his third weekend visit in a row to the pub. He'd stopped pretending to himself that he had business in town that made the trip worthwhile and had gone anyway. On his second visit, they'd sat across from each other in the empty bar and he had found himself telling Ilse about his divorce and his son living 1,500 kilometres away. In turn, she had told him how she'd had to put her degree on hold and become a full-time carer when her mum's cancer prognosis became terminal. She'd been engaged, but the daily grind of end-of-life care had proved a bit too much for him, and by the time her mum died, Ilse wasn't engaged anymore. They had had another drink, and somehow, Nathan wasn't sure how, they'd ended up smiling, and finally laughing. Not about what had happened, but about other things, lighter things that had made everything else seem more bearable. He couldn't stop staring at her. He liked the way she looked and the way she looked at him. He told her about the sand dunes. She smiled and said she'd love to go with him one day. On Nathan's third visit, he'd stayed again until closing time, and Ilse had reached out for his hand after he helped her lock up. The road had been deserted in both directions. She'd let him lead her away from the only streetlight so they could see the glorious night sky more clearly, and he'd found himself, as hoped, in a dark corner, pressing her hard against the side of his four-wheel drive, with her mouth warm against his. In a heady mix of delight and disbelief, he'd thrown open the rear of his car where his sleeping bag was rolled out and waiting for him. Her skin was soft and hot as he'd reached under her shirt and felt her hands on his jeans. Then he'd held her tight and listened to her fast, rhythmic breath as the stars shone down on them through the dusty windows. Afterwards, he had lain there looking at her, the car doors open to let a breeze in and the sleeping bag kicked aside. She had smiled, her teeth white in the dark. What? Nothing. That was... He tried to think of the word. Exquisite, revitalizing, transformative. "Great," he said. It had been the first time since Jackie had left, but it was more than that. He felt better than he had in years. "Really great." "Thanks," she'd laughed. He ran a hand over her. "So, what now?" She smiled again. "I'm pretty sure the backpacker's handbook says this is the part where you disappear into the sunrise and I never hear from you again." It was his turn to laugh. "No way." He'd pulled her closer, feeling the spark of her skin on his as she rolled onto him. "That's not what happens." She'd been right and he'd been wrong, as it turned out. But he'd really meant it at the time. "Why are they stopping?" Sanders suddenly leaned forward in the passenger seat and Nathan was brought back to the present. Up ahead, Harry's car was pulling to a halt by the fence. They were nowhere near the stockman's grave yet. They were nowhere near anything that Nathan could see. They watched as Harry jumped out, leaving the engine running. He crouched and checked the ground, touching his finger to the dust from time to time.
"What's going on?" Sanders said.
"I don't know." Nathan wound down his window and leaned out.
"Harry, what are you doing?"
"Looking."
"For what?"
"Anything."
The St. Helens cop had said pretty much the same thing, but at least with Harry there, there was a chance it might actually mean something useful. Nathan wound his window back up and shrugged.
"You heard him looking."
Xander sat back and waited. Minutes ticked by and finally Harry got back into his car. They started moving again. Ilse had left him just after dawn. The townsfolk may have been few and far between, but they were all early risers. She had kissed him as she buttoned her shirt.
"I'll drive you home," Nathan had said.
"No need." She pointed to the accommodation block beside the pub.
"That's me."
"That close? We could have gone there."
She jumped out of the car and grinned.
"What's wrong?
You didn't have enough fun here?"
"Yeah, I did."
"Me too." He was buzzing as he watched her leave. He'd pulled on his clothes and the smile on his face had lasted the whole morning as he'd gone around town getting his jobs done. He was nearly finished and filling up at the service station ahead of the drive home when someone pulled in beside him. Nathan clocked the top of the range four-wheel drive and felt his grin fade for the first time. He'd kept his head down as his father-in-law, ex-father-in-law, opened the driver's door and climbed out. Out of the corner of his eye, Nathan thought he saw Keith Walker hesitate. Not for too long, though. There were only two pumps, and Nathan was using one. If Keith needed fuel, he had no choice. He picked up the empty one.
"Nathan?"
"G'day, Keith."
Nathan concentrated on the pump. He was going to fill up his tank and drive away, and that was it. Keith looked over.
"I spoke to Jackie yesterday."
Nathan watched the numbers on the dial turn around.
"Oh, yeah?"
"Not a question."
"And look, she's instructing her lawyers to push back."
"Righto. Nathan, be reasonable. Asking for that level of contact, it's too many calls and visits for a kid Xander's age."
"My lawyer reckons it's a pretty standard custody split. For divorced couples who live around the corner from each other, maybe, but not with you all the way out here."
"She's the one who left, not me."
Nathan shut his mouth, then opened it again.
"Anyway, I would have thought you'd be happy to have Xander round."
Keith, with four properties, was one of the country's biggest landowners and in a good year occasionally troubled the very tail end of the rich list. Now he shook his head, his mouth downturned.
"Kathy and I see Xander in Brisbane. There's no reason for the boy to come out here."
"I'm his dad, Keith." The pump clicked off. The tank was full. "So there's one bloody good reason for you." Nathan looked at his father-in-law properly for the first time. He was a bit pale and seemed tired. Probably stayed up too late counting his money, Nathan thought, as he went inside to pay. Through the window, he could see Keith watching him. Nathan had never been sure what it was about him that the bloke objected to so strongly. Keith hadn't gotten along with Nathan's dad, but that wasn't exactly unusual. Nathan hadn't got along with his dad either. And Keith had been all right when Nathan and Jackie had first got together. Although Nathan wondered, perhaps he'd just been biting his tongue, hoping the romance would run its course and fizzle out. It got worse the better things got with Jackie. By the time the wedding rolled around, Nathan was barely on speaking terms with his new father-in-law. Keith had tried to talk Jackie out of getting married more than once, as Nathan learned sometime later when Jackie screamed it at him across the room. But the wedding had gone ahead, like it or not, and afterwards Keith had carved off part of his own extensive property and called it a peace offering. It was a relatively small strip directly bordering the Bright family's land, and Keith had presented it to the newlyweds as a gift. "Consider it a foothold in Kirribee Station," he'd explained. If they made it work and outgrew it, they could buy out more from him over time. Nathan had privately had a few doubts about that bit of land. The strip on that side of the fence had never looked good to him, but Jackie had been excited, so he hadn't said anything. She'd encouraged him to pour resources into it, set them up properly as a family property with one eye on the future. Nathan took the third of Burley Downs he inherited when his dad died and sold half his share to Cameron. His new land swallowed up the money as fast as he could put it in. Jackie couldn't understand it. She encouraged him to sell the remainder of his Burley Downs stake. Invest more. Try harder. Her dad made good money from property. Why couldn't Nathan? He refused to sell the rest of his inheritance, and that was their first big fight as a married couple. Jackie went to stay with their parents for a few days. When she came back, Nathan voiced his opinion out loud that the land Keith had given them was a dud. That was their second big fight, and Jackie had climbed straight back in the car and disappeared to her parents' house for another few days. And it occurred to Nathan as he watched her drive away from the shitty piece of property that possibly that was exactly what Keith had been hoping for. Nathan now felt the wheels go over a bump and told himself to focus. The ground was uneven and Cameron's car was unfamiliar. The last thing he needed was to get bogged in a sandbank. Up ahead, Harry's car was slowing again. He had stopped twice more along the way, getting out to examine the ground along the fence line, or turn in a slow circle, taking in the surroundings. "What does he think he's going to see at the grave?" Xander said as it came into sight. "I don't know," Nathan said, "but he's known Cam since he was born. Maybe he just wants to see for himself." "Maybe." Xander didn't sound convinced. Nathan had missed Xander even more than he'd expected when Jackie had finally left for good. She'd been threatening it for so long it was almost a relief when it happened. She was absolutely sick of things. Nathan was a crap husband, crap dad, crap bloody provider, and she let him know it. Nathan had thought he would be glad to see the back of her, but the separation from Xander felt like a physical blow. He had found himself poring over photos, looking at Xander's happy face, his small hands and his thick hair, already with a bit of a wave. Nathan even missed hearing him cry out in the middle of the night like an engine warming up. When Xander had been a baby, Nathan used to sit next to the cot in the dark and play his guitar softly. It had been one of the only things that seemed to soothe him for a time, and Nathan had been surprised when Jackie found that more annoying than helpful. Nathan had refused to fight with her in front of Xander. Wasn't the kid's fault he and Jackie didn't get along. It probably wasn't all her fault either, Nathan could admit in his more honest moments. It had been a hard few years, both being married and being separated. And since Jackie had left, he'd found that sometimes he did feel better. Like when he was lying in the back of his car with a nice Dutch barmaid. But he always missed Xander. Nathan sometimes wondered what would have happened that day if he had ignored Keith at the service station, got in his car and driven straight home. He could have shaken his father-in-law's hand on the way past. He could have punched him full in the face. And things still would have worked out better in the long run. He hadn't done either of those things. He'd finished paying for his fuel, and Keith called out to him across the forecourt.
"You need to know, Nathan. Kathy and I are going to pay for Jackie's lawyers." "Bullshit."
Nathan stopped mid-stride, just metres from his car.
"It's true." "I don't bloody doubt it's true."
Nathan changed direction and came close to Keith.
"I mean, it's bullshit that you're sticking your oar in. We feel you're being unreasonable. Me? And we want to make sure Jackie's well represented. And Xander. Xander's fine, mate. He doesn't need your help. He needs to see his dad from time to time. That's what he needs. Nathan, if your bloody daughter..." "Hey, watch yourself."
Keith sounded out of breath.
"No, you watch yourself. If your bloody daughter had her way, I would never see him at all."
Keith didn't reply, but the answer played out across his face as clearly as if he'd said it. "Yes, ideally." Nathan felt a stirring of fear. He'd expected some pushback on the custody arrangements, but he hadn't considered they would go that far. They couldn't cut him off from Xander completely, could they? He thought not, but then Keith had some pretty deep pockets. Nathan took a step in, raised a finger and pointed it at his former father-in-law. He could see Kylie, the service station attendant, watching them through the window. Later, she would be quick to say that Nathan was behaving aggressively. Right then, he didn't care. Keith, mate. Nathan kept his voice soft and controlled. You listen to me carefully, because this is the truest thing you are going to hear all year. You might be able to buy and sell every bloody cow in this district, but you can't keep me away from Xander. It's what Jackie wants. Tough shit. Jackie's going to have to live with it. Keith jangled his keys, perhaps a touch nervously. Not if I can help it. If you'd been a better husband and father in the first place, we wouldn't even be in this position. Mate, there's nothing in this world that would keep that woman happy. Maybe if you hadn't always been in her ear telling her what a waste of space I am, then maybe she wouldn't have left. You think it's my fault she saw some sense? I tried my best with you, Nathan. I gave you that land, didn't I? I gave you a chance. Nathan laughed. Yeah, right. You keep telling yourself that. I never had a bloody chance with that land, and you know it. You wanted me to stuff up, and you wanted Jackie to see it, and you got your wish, mate. Well done. But you're not going to get what you want when it comes to Xander. We'll see. Would you seriously be happy if I abandoned the kid? You think that'd be better? Honestly? Yes. I don't think Jackie or Xander are better off for being around a man like you. Why? Nathan felt a genuine stirring of curiosity beneath the anger. What's so bad about me? You've never even bothered to get to know me, Keith. I know men like you, Keith said. I've lived my whole life in the outback and I know what goes on out here. I know what men like you do. What's that supposed to mean? Keith opened his car door. This is a waste of time. I'm not getting into this. I've got to go. Wait, who are you talking about? You mean my dad? For one. Hey, no. Nathan put his arm out and grabbed the door, blocking Keith's way. He was a lot bigger than the other man. That's not fair. You sure about that? Keith looked pointedly at Nathan's arm until he slowly dropped it. Keith shook his head and climbed into the car. He ran down the window. Don't try to call Jackie. Communication should go through the lawyers. Jesus, Keith! Nathan had leaned in through the window. Kylie, watching from behind the service station counter, later remembered seeing that too. This is between me and Jackie. Keep your money out of it. You listening? I don't want you messing around with my family. No, Nathan. Keith had actually laughed. You're the one who's not listening. I'm going to keep writing those checks as long as it takes. Jackie and Xander aren't your family. They're mine. And I'm going to make sure they're properly looked after. So you listen to me now. I don't give a shit what you want. I care about what I want and what Jackie wants. And what exactly is that? Don't bloody come near me or my family again. Nathan could have reached through the window and broken the man's nose. To that day, he sometimes wondered if he should have. The whole thing would have been done and dusted a lot quicker at least. But somewhere, in the midst of it all, he had suddenly thought about Ilsa. The magic of the night before had more or less been hosed off thanks to Keith, but, for just a moment, the man in front of him seemed a tiny bit less important. He and his money couldn't touch everything. Nathan had made himself take a long, deep breath. Without another word, and with a level of self-control he had barely demonstrated in all his life, he'd walked to his own car and driven away. Nathan parked further away from the grave than Harry did. It looked somehow even more lonely than it had the day before. Bub got out this time as well and followed Harry over to the headstone. They stood side by side. The sand and the wind had almost entirely repaired the ground, as Nathan had expected. It was already hard to imagine Cameron lying there. Nathan watched through the windscreen as Bub said something, and the slightest frown crossed Harry's face. Nathan turned to Xander.
Do you want to get out?
No. Xander was looking anywhere but at the place where Cameron's body had been. Do you?
No. They sat in the car as the smell of rotting food floated through from the back. Nathan had spotted the expensive four-wheel drive from miles away. He'd left the service station with his hands gripping the steering wheel hard and Keith's words ringing in his ears. Ilsa and the night before seemed a long time ago, and now Nathan just felt hot and fractious. He'd been planning to drive straight home, but he could feel the lack of sleep catching up with him, and that was never good news on the road. He'd pulled over at the bakery and bought a coffee. He still felt tired, but as he sat in the car sipping coffee and thinking about the reason for his lack of sleep, the smile started to return to his face. He'd hit the road 20 minutes later and was half an hour out of town when he saw the four-wheel drive parked at an angle on the gravel track. Not even parked, perhaps, just stopped, half on the road, half off. Nathan had recognised the car well before he'd seen the figure leaning against the hood. Later, Nathan worked out that he must have had 3 or 4 minutes to make the decision. It hadn't been spur of the moment, whichever way you cut it. It had been calculated, and in the end, that made it worse. Either way, the facts were the same. Nathan had seen Keith's car parked at an angle, and then he'd seen Keith. One arm waving, one arm clutched by his side, and a look of deep disappointment on his face as he realised it was Nathan behind the wheel. Still, Keith had waved a second time, his body bent over slightly. One arm flapping in the air, the other down by his side, near the pocket where he kept his money. Nathan's foot had touched the brake, then, without fully letting himself think about it, eased off again. He pictured Xander, miles away from him now, and he'd felt a weight in his chest and a rush of blood to his head. Somewhere beneath it all, he heard Keith's words. "Don't bloody come near me or my family again." "Whatever you say, mate." Nathan drove past and did not stop. Chapter 11. Not that anyone cared, but for the record, Nathan's conscience had got the better of him. He'd turned around after 30 minutes, which became an hour by the time he got back to Keith's car. The bloke's four-wheel drive was still there, still parked at its odd angle, but there was no sign of Keith. Uneasy now, Nathan had called it in on the radio. There had been an unusually long wait before anyone had answered him. Keith had been taken away by ambulance, he was finally told. "Is he all right?" Nathan had asked. Another long wait. The dead static dragged on into a second minute. "It's too late, mate," said a voice at last. It had to be someone he knew, but he didn't recognise the tone. Too late for Keith? Shit, seriously? "No. For you to pretend you give a fuck. He told us you left him." And with that, Nathan's radio had fallen silent. Nathan glanced now over at Xander, who was watching Bub and Harry standing over the stockman's grave. Bub had his back to them as Harry crouched by the headstone, examining what little remained of the small hole at its base. He stayed there for a long time, then finally stood and surveyed the land in every direction. Nathan didn't bother turning his own head. He knew what was out there. Nothing. For miles and miles. Keith had been having a stroke. He had nearly died. Nearly. But not quite. And no thanks at all to Nathan. Even knocking at death's door as he was stretched into the ambulance, Keith had summoned the energy to drag his oxygen mask from his mouth and tell his rescuers how Nathan had driven past, leaving him for dead. Keith had, in fact, been discovered within 15 minutes by a delivery driver. He was bloody lucky, everyone said. Chance in 1,000 that anyone came along at all. The story had whipped through the district like a dust storm. The disgust and distrust were palpable. Leaving someone stranded out there was not a matter of manners. It was life and death in the most literal sense. Nathan had single-handedly managed to do the unthinkable and unite the entire town. White, Indigenous, old, young, long-standing rivals, firm friends. 30-year grudges were set aside for as long as it took to discuss Nathan's transgression.
On this issue alone, the entire community of Ballymarra was unwavering. Leaving a fellow man to the mercy of the elements was almost unimaginable and absolutely unforgivable. And if Nathan Bright, outback born and bred, didn't understand that, then the life in that far-flung community was not for him. Nathan had apologized, sincerely and at length, as had Harry and Liz on his behalf, and after a beat, Cameron as well. Jackie had picked up the phone long enough to scream down the line at him from Brisbane, then hung up and called her lawyers. At least she spoke to him, Nathan later thought. She was one of the few who did. The community punishment was swift. There had been an excruciating town meeting where Nathan had stood up in front of 60 pairs of accusing eyes and read from a prepared apology. He'd been nervous, and it had come across as awkward and hollow even to him. He tried to explain about the custody battle and the pressure he'd been under. It was no excuse. You could be on fire and half dead yourself, and you would still be expected to stop and help. There wasn't a reason in the world that could justify what he had done. If it proved anything, it was that Jackie's custody concerns were valid. Her lawyers later got a transcript of what Nathan had said and used it against him. Jackie herself had taken the trouble to compose an email. To this day, Nathan had some very strong feelings about that, which her mother read out loud to the community meeting in a quivering voice, detailing the toll Nathan's actions had taken on the family. That had been exceptionally well received. Nathan had caught even Bub nodding sympathetically in places. There had been some heated murmurs that Sergeant McKenna should charge Nathan with attempted manslaughter, which thankfully came to nothing. So instead, the townsfolk turned their backs and closed ranks. Like a cancerous growth, Nathan was excised, and the community healed without him. He was banned instantly from every public facility in town. The service station and the post office eventually had to agree to serve him, after Glenn ordered them to, but transactions were completed without eye contact. Pretty soon, words were whispered into the ears of Nathan's casual staff, and they handed in their notices one by one. He was forced to offer higher wages for lower skills and still couldn't find replacements. He wasn't able to handle all his cattle on his own and had to cut back. His usual mustering contractors refused to take his calls, finally admitting they'd been threatened with boycotts if they did business with him. Not that they would anyway. What kind of scumbag leaves a man for dead? He was forced to go further afield and pay a lot more for a lot less. One morning, a few months after it happened, Nathan had woken up to a strange stillness on his property. He had lain there, anxious and unsettled, as it dawned on him. He was entirely alone. No staff. Nothing but static on the radio. Nathan stared at the ceiling. There was not a single other person near him for hours in every direction. He had been cast fully and completely adrift. Xander was avoiding looking at the grave by rifling through the contents of Cameron's glove box. Both cops had had a look, but Nathan hadn't opened it up himself. It appeared well organized and practical, much like the whole of the property under Cam's dynamic leadership, he thought with a hint of bitterness. Anything interesting in there? Not really, Xander shook his head. But it looks like he was planning to go to the repeater at some point. He's got a repair guide here. Really? Nathan reached out and took it. He turned it over in his hand. Maybe just for show, so no one would realize he was planning to come out here instead. Maybe, Xander said. But there's a lot of info here. He's printed out instructions and marked off all the equipment he's packed. Nathan frowned. I suppose he could have changed his mind on the way. Xander said nothing and shrugged, his eyes forward now and fixed on Harry and Bub. Nathan had tried to call Ilsa. He'd left it too long out of fear of what she might have heard and at a loss himself as to what to say. Don't believe the worst, perhaps. But why shouldn't she? It was true. He'd even looked for her at that terrible town meeting, and felt both giddy with relief and strangely disappointed when she wasn't there. By the time he'd finally worked up the guts to phone the pub during her usual weekend shift, weeks had gone by. The manager had answered. He'd recognised Nathan's voice and told him if he saw or heard from him again, it wouldn't be the police he'd be calling to help solve the problem if Nathan got his drift. Nathan had, but still found himself driving towards town the next weekend and the one after that. He had tried to work out which door of the staff accommodation belonged to Ilsa and slipped a note underneath. He didn't know if she'd ever got it. If she had, he never heard. He found himself parking in the shadows off the road and watching the lights of the pub from a safe distance, unable to go in, but unable to stay away. He'd continued to do that for a while in the following years, maybe once every 6 months, just to hear the sound of voices other than his own inside his head. He would park in a dark corner, listening to the muffled chatter and occasional music floating from the pub. He didn't do it anymore. Nearly a decade on, he wasn't sure who would be inside these days and whether any of the faces would recognise him. They'd remember his name, though, he suspected. The story seemed to have been handed down from ear to ear. He had become nothing more than a warning. One evening, not long after it happened, he'd seen Cameron and Bub come out of the pub laughing and shaking hands with a few of the same blokes who now looked straight through Nathan. Nathan had kept his distance from his brothers as much as he could since it had all blown up. They hadn't spelled it out, but he knew what he'd done had stained them too. He kept away so they didn't have to ask him to. He'd watched them outside the pub and his initial flash of betrayal had slowly morphed into something more cautiously optimistic. But the call he'd been hoping for from Cam, "Come down, mate, I've straightened things out, I've explained, they know you're sorry," had never come. A week later, Nathan had driven in again, and this time seen what he realised he'd been waiting for. Ilsa had been illuminated by the single streetlight as she finished her shift. He'd had his hand on the door and a garbled apology ready when the manager and two stockhands had followed her out, chatting among themselves as she locked up. They'd lingered in the street after she'd finished and Nathan had had to watch her walk away, the regret sour and sharp inside him. After that, he had swallowed his pride and asked Cameron straight out to put in a good word at the pub. "Mate, I'm hardly ever in there myself," Cam had said. It had sounded like he was frowning. "I only go so Bub has someone to talk to. Please, Cam, ask if I can come back. There's a girl, a nice one, working behind the bar." He was speaking a language his brother would understand. Cameron had laughed. "Oh, yeah, I've seen her. She's all right." "Yeah, listen, so you'll ask them? See if they'll let me back?" Nathan had held his breath until the answer came. "Mate, I'm sorry. It's too soon. There's nothing I can do. They don't want you there." Nathan had hung up. He hadn't spoken to his brother again for 3 months. Xander returned the papers to the glove box and fidgeted in his seat. Nathan could tell he'd had enough and was anxious to go. Nathan was pretty keen himself. He wondered if they should drive on ahead but felt strangely reluctant to leave Bub and Harry lingering beside the grave. Their heads were down as they spoke in voices Nathan couldn't hear. "We'll head back in a minute," he said, and Xander nodded. Nathan had always been privately gratified that Xander had never really warmed to his grandfather. Jackie had told Xander her version of the story as soon as he was old enough, so Nathan then hadn't been able to refrain from telling his. Immediately he'd wished he hadn't bothered. His version hadn't sounded much better. Either way, Keith was dead now. He'd succumbed to a second stroke 4 years after the first, which was hardly Nathan's fault, but did nothing to help lift the finger of blame. Keith's widow had moved to Brisbane to be closer to Jackie and Xander, and now lived in a nursing home. Nathan had hoped for a while that Keith's death might bring an end to his banishment, but if anything, it had seemed to make it worse. As though having suffered the crime, Keith was the only one with the authority to lift the punishment. Now he never could. It would all blow over, Nathan had told himself daily at the start. Nearly 10 years later, he was still waiting. He no longer thought that daily, or at all, in fact. Most days now were spent dwelling on the what-ifs. For example, what if Keith had actually died out there on the road that day? If he'd had the bloody decency to fall down quietly with his arm clutched by his side and his mouth shut. Through the windscreen, Nathan watched Harry kick the toe of his boot in the ground near the grave. Without Keith around to point the finger, things would have worked out a lot differently for Nathan. Dead men didn't talk, and no one would have known what he had done. Nathan would have been free and clear. Finally, Harry said something to Bub, who nodded. Together, they turned their backs on the grave and headed to their car. The engine fired up, and Nathan started his own. He took a last look at the ground where Cameron had been found. Dead men didn't talk. Nathan must have thought that 100 times over the years, but as he drove past the grave, the idea slipped slightly, taking on a strange and unfamiliar form. It was uncomfortable as it lodged itself in the darkest corner of his mind. The wheels jutted over a patch of rough ground as he pulled away. Nathan didn't look back, but instead kept his eyes forward. His gaze fell, almost involuntarily, on the car in front. Specifically on the shapes of the two men and on the rearview mirror in which Nathan could just make out a pair of eyes. Up ahead, Harry was watching him. Chapter 12. Even at a distance, Nathan could see his mum react as he pulled up the driveway in Cameron's car. Liz was sitting under the tree by her late husband's grave and stiffened at the sound of the engine. She started to stand, then slumped back down as Nathan, not Cameron, emerged. He'd parked next to Harry's vehicle, although there was no sign of either him nor Bub. Nathan had fallen so far behind on the drive back that they had eventually pulled almost out of sight. "I'm going to have a word with your grandma," Nathan said to Xander as they climbed out. "No worries, I'll be in my room." Xander headed off like he had something on his mind. Nathan watched him go, then walked over to see Liz. Duffy was sitting by her feet. "What did Glenn say?" Liz looked up. She'd been crying again. "He's going to give you a call. Sends his condolences."
"Did his condolences include any answers?"
"No." He sat down on his mum's right side. Her hearing wasn't so good on the left. Duffy moved to rest her head on his knee. Liz stretched out a hand and Nathan took it. He could see an old scar on her arm, its angry mark now faded with age. He ignored it as usual, looking instead at a new one that bloomed below, red and recent. A skin cancer removal, he knew without asking. They all had it to some degree. Every white adult in the area. Whenever the specialist flew into town, there was always a queue of people waiting their turn to get the treacherous parts of their flesh cut out or burned off. Then crossed their fingers until next time. Nathan had plenty of scars of his own. "This all clear?" he said, pointing at the red wheel.
"I think so, for now."
Liz turned her arm over so he couldn't see it anymore.
"But whoever knows?"
Somewhere close by, Nathan heard a dingo howl and they both turned towards the sound.
"They've been hanging around for a while, those ones," Liz said. "They're getting too brave."
Nathan hesitated. "You want me to try and get him?"
"Bub will do it. He likes it. The money,"
she added quickly. The council paid $30 for every dingo scalp presented at the cop shop, where Glenn would count them and fill in the paperwork. Liz sighed.
"Is Bub all right, do you think?"
Nathan thought about his brother standing in the dark with his stream of urine hitting the ground. "I don't know. Bub's Bub."
"Doesn't seem worse to you?"
"Honestly, he seems about the same." Liz looked at the ground next to Carl's grave.
"I never in my life thought it would be Cameron going here. I can't stop running through things in my mind, what I should have done differently."
"Don't do that to yourself. There was probably nothing that would have changed anything."
"That feels worse somehow."
Liz shook her head.
"I wish I hadn't gone riding that last morning, but someone had to exercise Sophie's horse."
"It threw her, did she tell you?"
She mentioned she fell. I wasn't sure if it was her fault or the horse's. She's training for Gymkhana again this year, but she'll have trouble if she can't control him. I thought I'd better check how he was travelling, but maybe if I hadn't gone... Liz stopped. There were tears in her eyes. Maybe if I'd sat down with Cameron and talked to him properly. Do you remember what you two talked about last time you spoke?
Nathan tried to think. Mending fences, probably.
Really?
Nathan saw her face and almost laughed when he realised her mistake.
Not like that, I mean, practically. How we were going to split the maintenance costs. Oh, of course.
She looked down.
Steve called from the clinic.
Unless the autopsy finds it was something other than dehydration, they'll release his body in a couple of days.
We can have the funeral on Wednesday if we want.
Christmas Eve? That soon?
It's either then or we have to wait until the new year. Ilse said she didn't know, so I told him we'd do it then. Better done, I thought.
She turned her swollen eyes towards the house and the girls' bedroom windows.
Do you think that was the right decision?
I think so. There's no good choice.
I suppose I'd better let the neighbours know then.
Will they come this close to Christmas?
Of course they will.
Liz's voice had an edge. Nathan knew that was probably true. People had liked Cameron. And even if they hadn't, they tended to make the effort for the dead. Funerals were one of the few events that ever drew his mum away from the property. Most were local, within a day's drive. But a few months ago, she'd flown all the way to Victoria to see her brother buried. Nathan had barely listened when Liz had called to tell him his uncle had died. Malcolm Deacon, dead of a coronary, aged 71. Nathan couldn't pretend to care. He hadn't even known the bloke. He'd only met him once, more than 20 years earlier, at the funeral for the guy's own daughter. All three brothers had gone to that one because Liz had made them.
"She was your cousin,"
she'd said. And apparently that settled it. Carl had point-blank refused to go, then seemed astounded when that hadn't deterred his wife's plans. Instead, Liz and the boys had flown and driven for hours, trailing all the way out to Kiwara, some shit-kicker town Nathan had never heard of in the arse end of Victoria. They'd arrived, and Nathan thought he could see why his mum had left practically the day she turned 18. It was bigger than Ballymarra, but there was something that felt off about the place. The soft-cocked locals did nothing but bitch about the weather while the Bright brothers strolled around in long sleeves enjoying the cool change. The family had listened to a sermon for a girl they had never met, surrounded by people they didn't know. Nathan knew his cousin had been 17, only a few years behind him, but he was surprised by how young that suddenly seemed when he saw the coffin. There were two boys and a girl about her age sitting near the front, visibly shaken, their eyes wide with disbelief. Bub, who had only been 8 at the time, had sobbed into his hands as if he'd known her. After the service, Nathan, Cameron and Bub had held back and watched Liz's frosty reunion with their brother. A cousin on the other side of the family had loitered the whole time, staring at them with the half-glazed eyes of a daytime drinker. He looked like the worst kind of dickhead, and Nathan had been glad he kept his distance. Later, the bloke had said something to upset Bub, so Nathan and Cam had cornered him in the toilets and roughed him up a little. Not too much. It was still a funeral, and they weren't animals, but enough that he'd remember it next time. As they'd left the wake, his mum had shaken her head and muttered something under her breath.
"What was that?"
Nathan said.
"Nothing. Just, we should have done better for that poor girl."
They'd headed out of town the minute it was all done and dusted. Liz apparently not interested in staying even a single night in the farming community she'd grown up in. That year felt like it was marked by death. Within a few months they'd prized Nathan's dad from a tangled metal wreckage and buried him in the far corner of the yard. After that, Liz hadn't set foot on a plane again until 3 months ago, when she'd announced she was attending her brother's funeral. Nathan had been completely taken aback. He'd felt nothing but vague relief at his uncle's death and had assumed his mum had felt the same.
"Why on earth are you going?"
he'd asked.
"He was my brother."
"Yes, but..." He'd started, then couldn't think how to continue. She had all the same information that he did. To be honest, Nathan thought it was bloody lucky the heart attack had done the man in before the legal system caught up with him. Not that the technicalities had mattered to Jackie. She'd had an absolute field day when she'd heard what his uncle had been accused of and had jumped at the excuse not to send Xander for his visits, citing ongoing legal proceedings and appropriate role model behaviour and all that bullshit. Nathan had been forced to pay a three-figure sum for his lawyer to send a six-sentence letter reminding Jackie of her court-ordered obligations. So if the bloke was dead in the ground, Nathan, for one, was happy enough about it. But Liz had seemed determined to go. Nathan had worried about her doing that absolute slog of a journey on her own. He'd thought about it for longer than he should have, then reluctantly said he'd go with her, only to be told that Cameron had already offered, and she'd told him not to bother either. For God's sake, she'd said. Mal wasn't worth one airfare, let alone two, not before and especially not now. There had been a long argument, and in the end Uncle Harry had gone with her. How was it? Nathan had asked him later. Quiet, Harry said. Many there? Pretty much just us. A couple of cops turned up. Officially? I don't think so. One was a local bloke from Kawara. Friendly enough, but on leave, he was a bit... Harry had waved at his face. Damaged. There was another one, tall guy, who said he used to live around there, but was based in Melbourne now. Didn't say much else, seemed pretty pissed off about the whole thing. I think they were there mainly to check the old bastard was really dead. Nathan suspected his mum had gone for much the same reason. At the thought of Harry, Nathan suddenly remembered the drive earlier. The man finding the hidden track in the rock face on the first attempt. Cam never mentioned anything specific that was bothering him, he said. Small stuff even? Problems with Harry or Bub? I don't think so. Like you said, Bub's Bub. And Harry? Liz frowned. Fine, as far as I know. Why? I don't know. Nothing. Just with Harry saying Cam might have been under pressure. I wondered... Wondered what? I don't know, if they'd had a falling out or something. Not that I know of. Liz's frown deepened. Harry's a good man. He's been good to this family. I know. He's been here longer than you have, and he's always done right by us, wouldn't you say? Yeah, I would. So what are you saying now? Nothing, forget it. A pause. All right, Liz said. But Nathan saw her eyes flick towards Harry's four-wheel drive. Listen, what happens to Cam's share of the property? Nathan said, changing the subject. It came out more bluntly than he'd intended, but Liz didn't seem to notice. It goes to Ilsa. There was a faint stiffness in her voice. With the day-to-day stuff, I don't know. We'll have to work out who's going to run the place long-term. She waited a beat as though half expecting Nathan to propose something. Hire a manager, I suppose, she said when he didn't. Not Bub, then? No. Liz's answer was quick. See what Harry reckons, but I don't think so personally. Make sure you and Ilsa include Bub in any conversations, though, would you? Yeah, of course. Across the yard, Nathan could see a kid's bicycle leaning against the house. How are the girls today? This morning they seemed a bit... He tried to find a better word and failed. Strange. God knows, it's hard to tell with Sophie. But Lo's taking it very hard. She was worked up already, even before all this. She's got the idea into her head that the place is haunted. By what? I don't know. The stockman, probably. He's the usual suspect. You all went through that phase as kids yourselves. The wind blew across the plain, and in the distance, Nathan could see a spiral of dust rise like an apparition. It's not hard to see why she thinks so. Liz followed his gaze. When I first came to live here, we used to have a stockman, a living one, who reckoned this whole area was haunted by the settlers' dead children, the ones who died badly, childbirth or accidents or illness, I suppose. There were plenty to choose from, Nathan thought. The child mortality rate had been sky high. Not a single white baby born in the town had survived until the 1920s. Liz's eyes shone with tears. He used to say the ones who wandered off called the loudest. For the rest of their lives, their mums would hear them crying out in the wind. Do you think that's true? That this place has ghosts? That the mothers would hear their lost children in the wind? Ah. He reached out and took his mum's hand again. No. He really didn't. If that were true, the outback air would howl so loud the dust would never settle. Chapter 13. The backpackers were setting the table for dinner when Nathan put his head around the kitchen door. He'd left Liz sitting under the gum tree with their own thoughts and come inside. Simon and Katie both looked up, the clatter of cutlery falling silent as they saw him in the doorway. Nathan had the distinct impression they'd stopped speaking abruptly. Sorry, he said, and wondered why he was apologising. Have you seen Bub? Simon shook his head. I thought he was out with you and Harry. Never mind. Thanks. Nathan didn't hear the low murmur of their voices start up until he was completely out of the kitchen. He found Bub in the living room, sitting on the couch with his feet resting on Nathan's sleeping bag. He was playing a video game, something involving shooting and a masked man. Cameron's painting looked down on them from the wall, a scene of serenity in contrast. Hey, Bub barely glanced up as Nathan came in. What are you doing? Nothing. This? He nodded at the screen. You want to do two-player? No, it's all right. Nathan pulled his sleeping bag out from under Bub's feet. That's my bed, you know. It's mainly the couch, mate. Katie walked past the open door and returned a second later carrying a clean tea towel. Bub's eyes followed her with raw longing. I bloody love her. He heaved a dramatic sigh. Oh, yeah, what's her last name? Bub grinned. I don't know, but I can tell you what it's gonna be. Nathan had to smile. I think you're a bit late, mate. Looks like she's spoken for. Bub's face darkened a little. It's a bloody crime. Great girl like her with a pommy prick like him. He's not even keeping her happy. How would you know? Does she look happy to you? I hadn't really thought about it. Well, I'd keep her happy, Bub said, with a meaningful nod in case Nathan had failed to fully grasp his intent. Yeah, all right, never mind that. Gunfire rang out on screen. Listen, can you... Nathan reached over and paused the game. What's your problem? Then Bub's annoyance faded as quickly as it arrived. Something wrong? It was about Cam. No, well, yeah, kind of. I wanted to talk to you. It's... Nathan faltered. I saw you last night. What? When? Bub's eyes flicked to the doorway where Katie had been and his cheeks reddened. Nathan wondered what he was thinking. Outside in the garden, he prompted. Bub frowned. Taking a slash on the grave sites? Oh, yeah, yeah. Bub actually laughed. So? So what do you think you were doing? It was only on Dad's. Like you've never done it? Nathan hadn't, in fact. Possibly because he'd never thought of it. Do I what, mate? Do you do that often? Time to time, whenever I'm passing and can muster it up. But why? Mate, come on. Bub turned back to his game, nothing more to say. It might never have occurred to Nathan to piss on a grave, but he knew Bub maybe had a little more incentive. The key with Carl Bright that you had to learn quick and early was to stay out of his way whenever you could and keep your head well down the rest of the time. Bub, born late, had never got the hang of it. Being an accidental baby was hardly his fault, but it hadn't helped his cause. Liz had never once hinted that Bub's arrival hadn't been entirely welcome, 12 and 10 years after his brother's, but Carl hadn't bothered to hide it. It might not have been so bad if Bub had followed Nathan rather than Cameron, who Carl seemed to find the least offensive by some margin. But Bub's slowness and his difficulty finding the right words had infuriated their dad, and Bub was completely unable to sense when it was happening. Nathan had tried to help him, showing him the signs to watch out for and growing frustrated himself when Bub didn't get it. Cam had tried too, but it was no good. Bub literally couldn't see it to save himself. Nathan looked at Bub now, older but still the same in some ways. Look, Dad's grave is one thing, but Cam's going to be there too, you know.
He's not there yet, though.
Bub had restarted the game and his eyes were glued to the screen.
Anyway, I wouldn't do that to Cam, would I?
I don't know, Nathan said, and Bub looked up sharply.
Me and Cam got along fine, thanks, better than you two did.
Nathan opened his mouth but was saved by a call from the kitchen. Dinner was ready. You'll kill that tree if you keep on doing that, he muttered as they went through, but Bub shrugged.
Like I give a shit, it's just a tree.
The atmosphere around the kitchen table already felt subdued. Ilsa turned to Nathan as he sat down next to Xander.
How did it go out there?
She asked neutrally. She was flanked by her two daughters and seemed to be working hard to maintain a brave face. Okay. Glenn's going to call you, he said. He let us bring Cam's car back. It's outside. Ilsa gave a small nod. Thanks. Nathan felt a soft hand on his shoulder now and moved his chair to give Liz space to sit down. She looked even worse under artificial light. The skin around her eyes was taut and shiny from crying. Katie put a plate in front of her and Liz stared at it with a faintly puzzled air. The phone in the hallway started ringing, and Liz and Harry both pushed their chairs back.
I'll get it, Liz said.
Might be Glenn. What did he say to you all? Ilsa asked as Liz left the room.
Nothing much we didn't already know,
Harry said.
He asked a bit about Cam's state of mind, how things were going on the property.
And what did you tell him? Ilsa was watching Harry closely.
What'd you expect? That things were going well here, but Cam had been worried about something.
Did he ask what?
Of course.
And? Harry's face barely moved, but he kept his eyes on Ilsa.
None of us were much help, so I reckon he'll be wanting to ask you.
Ilsa shot a look at her daughters who were watching now.
Maybe we should talk about this later.
For a few minutes, the only sound was cutlery against plates and the ticking of the kitchen clock. Nathan cleared his throat and turned to Harry.
I thought I'd go to Lehman's Hill tomorrow, try to fix that mast. That'd be good. Bub can give you a hand.
He looked at Bub, who nodded.
It's fine, Nathan said. Xander will come.
Harry shook his head.
It's a long way and the radio's down. Take Bub too.
Nathan opened his mouth to reply when Liz appeared at the door, her face strangely fixed.
Glenn needs to talk to you,
she said to Ilsa, who stood up and left the kitchen.
What's wrong?
Harry said.
Nothing, everything's fine.
Liz flashed a rigid smile at the girls. But a quick word outside, Harry, if you don't mind. Nathan saw his confusion mirrored in Bub and Xander's faces. They heard the slam of the screen door as Harry followed Liz out, and a moment later the hum of low voices on the veranda. The backpackers looked at each other, their meals forgotten on their plates. A minute passed, then another. No one came back. Slowly, they all picked up their forks and continued eating. After what felt like a long time, Nathan heard fast footsteps in the hall and the screech of the screen door again.